The material shared within this podcast is based on the personal experiences and learnings of the presenter. Coloplast has paid the presenter for sharing this information. Nothing within this podcast is intended to be used as medical advice and/or used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Welcome to the Coloplast Professional Bowel and Bladder Matters podcast, where we explore various important topics related to ostomies and continence.
I am your host, Amy Daniels McClure. I am a registered nurse with a clinical doctorate. I currently work as a clinical specialist with Coloplast. We're looking forward to a podcast series with Dr. Wiggin out of Florida. We're excited that he's sharing his expertise with us. Dr. Wiggin, can you take a moment to share with us your training, your education, and maybe a little bit on your expertise in this field?
And Dr. Luke Wiggin, I did my medical school and urology training at the University of South Florida. I did a fellowship in reconstructive urology and trauma at Washington University in St. Louis. I was on faculty at University of South Florida for 8 years, and I achieved associate professor status. I now practice at Orlando Health Urology Group in Orlando, Florida, where I currently lead the reconstructive urology division. I concentrate on urethral and ureteral reconstruction, neurogenic bladder, and incontinence.
Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to this series. Our topic today is a urologist's perspective on incomplete bladder emptying. Really excited for you to join us and share your expertise. The first thing I want to do, though, is provide the audience with a little background on your clinical expertise as a urologist.
I am a reconstructive urologist, and so the vast majority of my practice is centered around restoring natural bladder and urinary habits.
What a great field for you to be in. So many people, I'm sure, need your services, and I hear you're a really good surgeon. So for the patients maybe that don't have the surgery or they don't qualify for the surgery for whatever reason, what do you use for when they can't empty their bladder completely? What's your clinical process outside of surgery for managing those bladders that don't empty completely?
Yeah, there's a large proportion of patients that cannot empty their bladders, and there is no tried and true surgery that will fix every patient that has that issue. And so there are many patients that are going to be asked to catheterize themselves for a long time, possibly for the remainder of their lives. And so in that situation, catheterization is the new normal for that patient, and selecting a catheter and the correct habits for how to catheterize is going to be key to not having problems or complications from having to do that.
And is there a specific condition that you see a lot of where you have to teach them how to empty their bladder with other means that you see in your practice that don't qualify for the surgeries maybe?
Yeah, there's a myriad of things. In men, it tends to be related to prostate issues. In men and women, both diabetes. Specific to women is pelvic surgeries, things like hysterectomy.
Where something happens in surgery or something?
Yeah, so hysterectomy will disrupt the nerves in the pelvis. That can lead to poor bladder emptying. And so that is not something that's easily reversed because it's a nerve damage.
You see neurogenic bladders as well?
That's right.
So those would not qualify. Those would need to have some sort of other bladder emptying besides a surgical intervention as well, right?
That's right. When we talk about patients that can't empty their bladder, the first decision is, are they having trouble emptying because they're obstructed? Or are they having trouble emptying because they have a weak bladder? And so if they have an obstructed bladder, then that is typically the most of the patients that can have a surgery that will then allow them to empty again. For patients that have a weak bladder, our surgical options are very limited, and it's much harder to get those patients off of catheters.
And I'm assuming if there's some sort of sphincter dysnergia, like we see in spinal cord injuries, that can't be fixed by surgery either, I'm assuming.
Well, I mean, interestingly, throughout history, patients that had dysnergia, we used to go in and literally cut their sphincters, and then they would become incontinent. That is a surgical option. I don't think it's a great option. You know, the really dysenergic patients have a hard time with anything other than catheterization.
How do people know that this is happening to them? What do they present to you in your office and you say, oh, you know, this may be something that we really need to start to deal with?
A lot of people do not realize they're not emptying their bladder well. Okay, and so it can be silent. And so we're looking for other signs, incontinence, that's especially new onset incontinence, alterations in kidney function on blood work or kidney swelling on imaging, known as hydronephrosis, or even infections, bladder infections, urinary tract infection.
Oh, those are a big deal, right? As a nurse, I've dealt with a lot of UTIs. They're no fun. I'm guessing that a lot of people probably get that UTI before they finally realize what's going on, because you and I can't tell when our bladder's empty, right? Some people can, I guess, feel if it's not totally empty, but what's the risk for patients getting UTIs? What do you tell your patients of, hey, you can't ignore that. We've got to figure out how to empty your bladder more.
As we age, we typically don't empty the bladder as well. We know from studies of bladders that are done with biopsies that as we get older, the bladder gets weaker. It literally runs out of mitochondria, which are the powerhouses of the cell, and then the bladder stops being able to squeeze hard enough to actually empty. And so that happens to everybody.
Well, thanks for that, Dr. Wiggin. Everybody listening as well appreciates that. Thank you.
In those patients where it becomes symptomatic with the things we mentioned before, especially urinary tract infections, then that's when we have to start treating it. It is not recommended at this point in the United States to screen for incomplete bladder emptying, but any patient that has symptoms related to their bladder, like the incontinence, like infections, must have a post-void residual checked, which is a simple ultrasound that's done in the office after a patient urinates to see how much is left behind in their bladder. And so that would be the first step. And then based upon that value in a conjunction with their symptoms is when you decide if that patient needs to empty better or not, which might involve catheterization.
So if we kind of look at more that intermittent catheter, so now you've decided that that patient does need to perform intermittent catheterization. What's the biggest challenge that you face, maybe not just you, but also maybe your nursing team, as far as teaching how to intermittent cath?
Yeah, there's men are resistant to the idea of any healthcare for the most part, speaking as a man. Mm-hmm. And so telling them they have to stick a catheter in their penis is a big stretch. And so you really have to spend some time explaining how it's going to help them from a total health standpoint. And so most of the patients, the men that are suffering with urinary tract infections or suffering otherwise with their urinary tract, will understand that they need to do this. And so then having a catheter that is comfortable for that patient is paramount, because the male has the prostate and pushing the catheter through the prostate tends to be the most uncomfortable part. And so the design of the catheter really comes into play at that point.
And men's urethra is really long, right? So, you know, I think they don't realize too, when we're teaching them as a nurse, you know, when I would teach them, they think their bladder's sitting right there and it's actually really long. So they've got, they got a long way to go with that catheter too. And if it's uncomfortable, I would guess they would just stop before they even get it all out.
Yeah. Most men will stop catheterizing because it's uncomfortable. For women, I think the bigger issue is the visualization and having to do things blind. And so, you know, with mirrors or different things, it can be done and it can be accomplished. There's a lot of women that are experts at this. They do it all the time. Mm-hmm. But the initial learning curve is definitely figuring out their self-anatomy.
Oh, I mean, I meet women who don't even realize that they have three openings. There's a lot that goes into teaching women just what their anatomy looks like. And I think, I don't know if you agree with this, but the psychosocial part of teaching for women is a little different, which maybe someday we'll get to talk to you more about that. But I think, you know, the whole idea of cathing has to be such an emotional event. And your team gets how long with them?
You have 5 minutes to figure this out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it usually takes multiple visits and bookending of the education.
So when you look at intermittent cathing, so one of the reasons why you started was UTIs. Then once they start intermittent cathing, they also have a risk of getting UTIs, right? So we talked about post-void residual, then there's post-catheterization residual. Do you think that post-catheterization residual still puts them at increased risk for UTIs? And do you see that in your practice?
When patients are cathing effectively, then their risk of UTI should go down. Again, kind of handling it separately, men typically have a lower amount of bacteria in their bladder because it's a longer distance for the bacteria to climb into their bladder. Women typically have more bacteria. That being said, the introduction of bacteria into the bladder by the catheter does occur. We know that. People who catheterize will be putting bacteria into their bladder. And that's one of the biggest questions I get when I'm starting someone on intermittent catheterization. Isn't it going to cause UTIs? And the short answer is that if you're doing this and you're getting more UTIs, then something's not being done right. Because the and I don't mean that you're necessarily catheterizing wrong, but it's not emptying all the way out. There's something else going on. Because the concept here is that when you have bacteria and you get those bacteria out of the bladder by draining it, either a natural urination or a catheter that will fully drain the bladder, then they don't cause a problem. But if they're able to sit and fester like an unflushed toilet, is what I say, then they start to cause problems. The key is making sure that you have fresh urine coming in and replacing the old urine that's full of bacteria and mucus and debris and other things.
In regards to your toilet flushing, that would be the post-catheterization residual, right? So if you're saying that there's still some in there, but how do patients know? I mean, they have a right to question, right? Like, hey, Dr. Wiggin, how do I know I'm empty? How do I know when I'm done cathing?
I mean, same thing. They didn't know they weren't empty before. And so they won't know they're not empty after catheterizing.
Yeah.
The only way is with doing an ultrasound, like the way we might have diagnosed them to begin with. And that's not feasible to do every time somebody catheterizes. You have to rely on your catheterization technique or the type of catheter you're using.
You know, Dr. Wiggin, I've heard a couple people talk about the difference between a bladder that is able to squeeze or, you know, the detrusor muscle, like you just talked about, is still intact versus one that has to catheterize. And that one of the reasons why we get UTIs is that when the bladder actually squeezes, it creates this flush, like you just talked about, where you and I, when we go, our urine actually flushes the walls of our bladder and gets all that bacteria and we get it out. When you catheterize, that's gone, correct? Because we're just going in with that catheter. And so it's even more important that they take all these other risk factors into account, right? Because they've got more bacteria sitting in there than a bladder that actually functions. What do you think about that analogy?
Yeah, I think the bacteria load is higher when you're catheterizing, but also if you stick the catheter all the way in and you drain the bladder kind of from the top down, the spigot is at the bottom of the bladder there. But when you put a catheter in, you're kind of blocking it off and draining it from the top down instead of the bottom up. There's debris that will hang out in the bladder, which is filled with bacteria. And so, you know, what I also tell people is it's kind of like you have your bathtub, but you didn't put the drain at the lowest point. The drain is halfway up the bathtub. You know, you're not going to drain it out very effectively. You're always going to have a little bit of bath water left in
where the bacteria love to sit and replicate
and wreak havoc.
Thank you for all of that great insight into intermittent cathing. You wanted to close, though, with some statements on your surgeries and kind of what you do in that world, right?
I would say that for some patients that have been told that they have to catheterize the rest of their life, there are some options sometimes. And so if they haven't seen surgeons that specialize in some of those other options, I would highly recommend people get a second opinion from a surgeon who may be able to help them. I want my patients to do well whether they catheterize or not. And if you don't have to catheterize, I think that's better. Most patients would like that.
Oh, yeah,
right,
for sure.
So
yeah.
Make sure you've exhausted all your options.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Bowel and Bladder Matters podcast, part of Coloplast Professional, where we believe clinician education related to ostomies and continence matters. For more educational resources from Coloplast, visit us at coloplast.us/professional.